Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to, again, another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. We, your hosts, Alex Baker and myself, Robbie Rosenfeld, here to give you yet again the rundown of all things sports for this past week. As always, we are brought to you by the Vigit Sports Betting app. Download it today, get fake coins, get real prizes, gift cards, game stations, a lot of cool stuff on there. Download it today and use the referral code All-Stars to join us. Got a lot to get to here, honestly, as there was a pretty even amount of stuff divvied up between the four major sports this past week. So start with football. Former number one overall pick offensive lineman Eric Fisher has signed with the Indianapolis Colts. He's going to be Carson Wentz's new blindside blocker. However, if anybody watched the Super Bowl, might not be the best number one overall pick you could have signed. But what do you think about this signing here for the Colts trying to bolster their line for trying to keep Wentz healthy? You know, tough thing to do.
Well, I think it's a good pick because he wasn't number one overall pick during the draft. And well, okay, let's backtrack a bit. That 2013 draft, awful draft. The fact that number one overall pick is a left tackle, and there's, I think, three offensive linemen selected in the first four picks, not a solid thing. But if I'm not mistaken, he was hurt during the Super Bowl. So in terms of Pat Mahomes not being protected, that's just a different story. I tend to imagine that this is a bit of an upgrade for the Colts, but they already have a really strong line. They have Quinn Nelson at left guard, who is always a stud. If Eric Fisher stays healthy, it's great. But I could imagine there being a clip where he gets beat off the left end and Carson Wentz gets absolutely blindsided, and we kind of call it a week with Carson Wentz.
And then we go back to the set era.
The era.
No, yeah. And I don't think it's a bad signing anyway. Only a one-year deal, so it's like they're banking on being super successful for a long time. But, you know, number one overall pick. This isn't an Anthony Bennett situation. It's not like he's a random number one overall pick. So hopefully this does something for the Colts. Again, trying to succeed with a younger but maybe more injury-prone quarterback. So we'll see how they do move forward. Not about the most amount here in the NFL. This one isn't necessarily NFL specific, but Seahawks receiver DK Metcalf ran in a 100-meter dash earlier this week. He ran a 10.37, which is not bad by any means for a man who's what did we say, 6'3", 230?
Yes.
That, first of all, if I ran against somebody in school 6'3", 230, I think I would have just cried because that would be terrifying. And I ran against Saquon Barkley, mind you. But this is a full second faster than anything I got close to. And again, this is from somebody who weighs almost 100 pounds more than me. If this dude slimmed down a little bit and really commits to this, I genuinely could see him having some kind of shot running for an Olympic team or something like that, if that's what his real end goal is here.
It's not. I mean, he just wants to show how fast he is. Like, he finished last in his heat, which, by first of all, the time he ran was quite incredible, especially for his size. But I think this is more like to prove like how fast, like, it's, I don't know about show, because he did run against like legitimate track and field professionals, but it's kind of like, here, let me just show you how fast I am. There's a reason I ran down Patrick Peterson, for example.
You're not wrong. I think it was Buda Baker, but
same was thing. It? Oh, it was Buda Baker, right? Patrick Peterson would outran him, clearly.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Either way, maybe if DK can maintain his speed towards the end of his NFL career, maybe this could be another path for him to go afterwards. Probably.
You think he's going to be running track and field events when he's like 35?
Dude, I think it'd be hilarious. Hey, Tyson Gay was running into his 30s.
Yeah, he was on steroids.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Well, either way, DK is a very, very fast person. There is no denying that.
Anyway, DK Metcalf, if you're listening, take some steroids. Really help out your running stock right there.
There it is. Heard it here first. All right. Moving down. Your Eagles making a few more moves, a little more noise. Claiming Kerryon Johnson, who was waived by the Lions. Just a little bit of extra running back depth. You think this is really a move that's going to have any amount of significance with Miles Sanders pretty much being the workhorse at this point?
Literally don't care. Let's move on.
Love that. All right. So we saw earlier in the offseason that the Patriots brought back Cam Newton, who I thought was more of a surprise. And then as he fell in the draft, they said Mac Jones with the 15th pick. Who do you think is going to come out on top to start the season as the Patriots' number one quarterback?
Great question. And I think the way it's going to go is Cam Newton is going to start the season. I think they'll probably start off like 2-1. I don't know what their schedule is, but like something where they're not just losing every game. They'll probably be like, oh, Cameron should be the starter. They'll go like 2-2, maybe 2-3. There'll be rumblings about Mac Jones. Bill Belichick will say, nope, don't start. We're starting Cam. Cam's our guy. And then they lose another game, and then Mac Jones is thrust in the spotlight. I don't think Cam's going to get hurt to like put Mac Jones in, but I think it's going to be, let's get the new guy some reps. And I think Mac Jones will end up being a more useful quarterback for the Bill Belichick scheme, that sort of pocket passer, kind of like Brady was, rather than this hybrid pistol shotgun, let's run the ball, kind of like a college sort of like Florida offense, like Tebow used to run.
As fun as that would be. No, I think you're right. I think Newton is going to be the guy to start the year. I think Mac Jones is going to be the guy to end the year. That being said, though, if either one of these guys at any point shows something special, I think you need to immediately insert them in and then run with it, because Cam is going to have the benefit of having run in this system already for a year, being the veteran quarterback, a former MVP. So he should know how to, you know, conduct himself. But then Mac Jones is going to have the benefit of, like, how much can you really expect from a rookie quarterback that could be a starter, could be a backup? Like, you know, no, they're not going to panic and trade Mac Jones or something stupid like that if he struggles out of the gate. So he's got that benefit of kind of just being able to play in this kind of freestyle. So I think that's kind of the way the Patriots should go, because Cam looked very limited last year in what he could really do. He's clearly not as fast as he once was, and his arm is clearly not what it used to be. I think Mac Jones is the way to go. It's the style quarterback, like you said, and then also just the fact that he's like, I really think he's just going to come in with this mindset of, I know what I'm doing, trust me. And I think the Patriots are going to back that up, at least after a few games.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think it's like Cam Newton, well, he has some promise. I think we've kind of seen all he can do. It's a serviceable season, basically. So I think going with Mac Jones would be the smarter option, just because there's a lot more potential. But like, who knows? Maybe Cam will be the better quarterback than him, but that's not saying much. Like, I'd rather take that risk for a season, see what happens.
Yeah, no, I get you there. Let us know who you guys think is going to be the starter for the Patriots. Might bring up a couple other of these as the season gets closer and closer, and we're not totally sure who's going to be starting where. The Bears might be a team we talk about this in the future here. But that's what we got for football. Move into the MLB now. The Royals, we've talked about the last few weeks being atop the AL. They have plummeted. They're on an 8-game losing streak. And this probably not all too surprising to any baseball fans. The White Sox and the Red Sox have now taken the top two spots in the AL. The Red Sox have kind of been there all year. The sad one, though, for all sports fans, the Yankees have finally started to turn it around, as they are currently in fifth in the AL at 18-16. Based off what you know about baseball, is this kind of just like, this was bound to happen, where the AL is going to kind of turn into form at some point?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, with what the Yankees paid for their pitching staff, and just their entire like roster, obviously you'd expect a little bit better than under 500 or last in the division. It's intriguing that they're still like behind the Red Sox. The Red Sox, I really did think, would struggle this year, but the White Sox are an up and coming young team. This makes sense. Yankees obviously are going to get better as the season progresses. Now, if they choke in the postseason, this will be expected, but like, people forget Gerrit Cole is still one of the best pitchers in the game and just absolutely can dominate. So I'd say give that some time and sort of see if their offense can put some stuff together, because that's a recipe for disaster for a lot of other teams. Yeah. And also, let's say on the off chance like the Red Sox do win the division, I can see a strong possibility the Yankees get a wild card. Whoever the one seed is, I don't think wants to play the Yankees. Like, that's an awful matchup. Because you have to basically hit your way out of it. That's no fun.
Yeah, going into a slugfest with the Yankees is not exactly something teams really should want to be looking forward to. All right, moving into the NL now. Kind of a funny one here. The Dodgers, who last week we mentioned they're starting to get beat up a little bit with the injuries, have fallen to the point they now have the same record as our Philadelphia Phillies, sitting at 18-17. Neither in the top five right now. I don't, again, not entirely sure how many teams are going to make it this year into the MLB playoffs, but not looking good for the Dodgers. Five consecutive series losses. Not looking sharp. Again, the injury is going to pile up, but at some point, the players that they have in are going to need to start performing, or this is going to get really ugly really fast. Whereas for the Phillies, they've lost their last two, but previously were on a five-game winning streak. We kind of figured this is going to be up and down for the Phillies this year, but when we're winning, what's been the thing going right for us?
The pitching's going well, and then we score a few runs to, like, bolster it. The problem is, if our pitching's not on, we can't score runs with it. Or we just, like the Braves game 2 days ago, it was 4-3 into the ninth. We allowed a run. It was 4-4. So, okay, that happens. It was 3-3 into the extras. Braves score, or we score a run, 4-3. They score a run, so fours. We end up going up 7-4, like the 12th inning. So we should be set. And then lo and behold, the Braves hit a 3-run double. So, like, kill me. And then they end up scoring in, like, the 13th inning, winning the game. So it's, like, kind of blowing games, like, defensively. I don't know. It's tough because I think all the pieces are there. It's just actually executing on it. Dodgers are just injury stricken right now and are playing probably, in my opinion, some tough competition. Like, the Phillies are just choking. It bothers me.
Yeah, no, the closing games is so important. We knew the bullpen was always going to be a, you know, something under the microscope this year for the Phillies. It's been better, but obviously still had issues. I think the starting pitching has actually been relatively great for the Phillies, you know, other than a few spot starts here and there. Wheeler has been one of the best pitchers in baseball, if we're being completely honest. Coming off, I think it was just like a three-hit complete game shutout. Incredible job. The bats, though, they got to get more consistent. Guys like Boehm, you know, Harper's back in the lineup, that's nice. But Boehm, Didi, these guys have to stay consistent. I think we got Gene Segura back, and he's been red hot coming back. So it's starting to line up into place for the Phillies, whereas the Dodgers is kind of the opposite, where they're leaving the lineup. You know, it's not looking great, but either way, both these teams, the rosters are there. It's just a matter of, like you said, can they actually put it into and turn it into real success on the field in the games. Moving up, if we're thinking about it, the Cardinals have taken the number one overall seed in the NL after a sweep of the Rockies, Nolan Arenado homering off his former team to help conclude that series. Cardinals are pretty good. Yadi, one of the hottest players in baseball. Arenado obviously going to do his thing. And Jack Flaherty, one of the best pitchers this year. Is this a team that we need to start talking about as, you know, one of the top competitors for a healthy Dodgers team?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, every year they are a competitor. But the problem is they always find ways to blow in the playoffs, which is quite funny to watch. Like, last year against the Braves, I don't know if they blew it necessarily, but they just couldn't keep pace with them. To me, that's kind of what the Cardinals are. They are that team that will make the playoffs, like, they'll win their division, but then lose, like, in the either probably the divisional or maybe the conference, but I don't think they're making it to the World Series. Like, they're good, but they're not great.
They'd have to get some stupid amount of hot to get to the World Series, in my opinion. But either way, playing pretty consistent baseball as of late, at the very least. Moving forward, on team I'm going to begrudgingly say is doing very well, the New York Mets, current 5-game winning streak and third in NL, and recently it has been for Francisco finally started like a real baseball player. It's short-term success. See if he can actually start turning into, you know, the consistency we've always seen from him, or at least accustomed to seeing from him. But it's a welcome sign, I'm sure, for Mets and for my fan teams at the very least, because I have them. But he's still batting under 200, so he's gonna keep doing this. But if their best player is gonna, you know, start to heat up, we talked about it the offseason, this could be the team that pulls in this tough AL East. So I guess, what are your thoughts on that? If Lindor is able to gain some consistency and they're able to stay healthy, could the Mets be the team to win that division?
I still don't think they'll be consistent enough. Like, Lindor, even now showing signs of life, is still like barely batting 200. Like the Mets are good, but not great. Like they were just beating up the Diamondbacks as late. So to me, I don't think the Mets are important, despite Lindor actually being potentially worth this $300 million contract. I still think with the Braves would be the favorite to win the division. Like the Braves are still a scary team, or the Phils. I think the Mets are not as good as we thought they'd be this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Braves, they got some work to do still. They're struggling. Nah, I think the Phillies are second in the division right now. The Braves might be third, but
they are. Yeah.
Or lower third than I think we would have assumed them to be. Last bit of news here for the MLB. John Means of the Baltimore Orioles, of all teams, threw a no-hitter against Seattle on the 5th of May. That was the fourth no-hitter this year. So first off, shout out to John Means. First in, I believe, over 90 years for the Orioles, if I'm not mistaken. An incredible feat by anybody. But for a team that was predicted to have a 0% chance to make the playoffs, always feels good to prove some of those people wrong, as John Means is pitching well this year in the Orioles. Special this year, but they're definitely not the worst team in baseball, like that chart I'm referring to may have suggested. What do you think is the cause of all these no hitters? No perfect games yet, but four no hitters early on in the year, and the bats are struggling a little bit. Do you think there's a cause to that?
No, because this happens every year. Like there's, I don't know about every year, but there's a few no hitters like every once in a while. Some, you're playing 162 games this season, there's bound to be a night where you just have an off night. Maybe it's not no hits, but like one or two and not scoring any runs. So to me, I'm not saying like John Means got lucky, but sometimes it happens where bats go quiet and you have good defense. It's an exciting thing to see, though. I'm not trying to discount that, but when you're playing a three-game series in 3 days, sometimes that second or third game just you go quiet and it's really annoying.
Yeah, no, it does happen every once in a while, especially because usually the team getting hit is a team that has had their struggles. Seattle, not the worst team in baseball, but definitely one of those teams you could see not an offensive heavy team by any means. So either way, great job from John Means, and we'll see who else can, you know, achieve this by the end of the year, how many we get, and if somebody can hold all runners off the bases at any point. That's obviously the dream for any pick. That's what we got here for baseball. Again, season really kicking into form now. Going to have a lot more stories for that as it goes on. We don't talk about hockey all that much on this podcast, but something absolutely hilarious happened and we need to bring it up. So I'm not sure what day it was specifically, but at some point last week, one of the Capitals players, Tom Wilson. So I guess what happened was there was a Ranger. His name was Pavel. I apologize if I butchered the name. Buchnerich. He was like laying face down on the ice and Tom Wilson in the back of the head, like super disrespectful, absolutely no place for that. The Rangers issued a statement out. I was like, we want him like suspended. We are going to be upset if the NHL does anything. The NHL didn't do anything. The Capitals didn't respond in any way. So the next day when they played each other again, let's just start. The entire game, there were 141 total penalty minutes given out. There were 72 penalty minutes given out in the first minute, and I think it was 4 minutes and 14 seconds. Over 100 penalty minutes given out in the first period of the game alone, and right as the puck dropped, three separate fights broke out. There were six fights in the first 4 minutes. The Rangers came out and said, this is how we're going to deal with this. And they actually injured Tom Wilson. He left the game in the first period and did not return. I don't know. I just thought this was kind of funny and worth talking about.
It's funny in the sense that they took matters into their own hands and got that many amount of penalty minutes. Hockey is always known as the violent and dangerous sport, like probably other than football. But I honestly, I'm ignorant in the sense that I have not seen this replay. I know exactly what you're talking about, though. It's been all over the news. But to me, if it's as dirty of a hit as, like, as you've said, the guy lying on the ice punched in the back of the head, like, the NHL has to suspend him for that action. That's like the whole defenseless receiver type rule in football. Like, the guy's defenseless. He's not trying to hurt you. I'm assuming didn't knock him out. And even if you did, like, let him go. Like, it's not in boxing. Once you hit knock a guy out, you have to back off. So it's a shame that our stooge Gary Bettman did nothing about it. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if I agree the Rangers should just try and fight everyone, because, like, you know, violence just adds to more violence, you know.
But violence is allowed in hockey.
I know it is, but Robbie, that just is going to end up with someone getting a stick in the back of the head. No one wants that either.
No. I don't want it to escalate into...
It will escalate. I don't think you understand. Violence always escalates.
I understand. See, I am fine if the line is drawn at every player at every second is doing one of those legal fights that we can talk about in hockey, but I don't want any, like, punching in the back of the head or sticks up the ass. None of that stuff. Hey, man. Don't hate here. We're friends.
I'm not hating, but it's like, but, oh yeah, he puts a stick in his ass. Yeah.
I'm just saying, if we can keep it perfectly legal, I am always for 10 to 15 plus fights in any given hockey game. Always for that.
Oh, I am too. I don't know. I feel like penetrating a man's butt with a stick is a little bit too far. I don't know about you.
If the NHL didn't spend that point, there would have to be some committee that comes in and redoes how the NHL does their suspensions. But either way, that's our big report on hockey. So let us know if you would rather get punched in the back of the head or have a stick shoved up your butt, I guess.
No, don't. Actually, don't. I don't care. I don't want to know.
He makes a fair point. We're going to move on here now. Yes. One last major sport to get to, that would be the NBA. Lots of playoff implications as the season is rounding towards an end here. Start with the Jazz. Bohan Bogdanovic had a career high 48 points against the Denver Nuggets in a game that kind of tightened their grip on the number one overall seed. Somewhere around 4 or 5 games left for most teams at this point. Bogdanovic playing very well down the stretch here, especially in games where Mitchell hadn't been playing. But Utah seems to be taking control up, I think, about 2 games now for that number one overall seed. I guess the only question is, do you think Phoenix is going to make one last run at it, or is Utah going to finish out as the top seed?
How many games are they playing this year? 72?
72.
So they got 4 games left. Do you know who owns the tiebreaker?
I would assume Utah, but I don't know for sure.
Because, like, the Suns would effectively have to win out.
Yeah.
And they'd be 52-20. And the Jazz would have to split, which, you know, that's the splitting thing isn't bad. I can't really see the Suns winning out necessarily, but I think the Jazz have it locked up, to answer your question. But I'm a little bummed about that.
Yeah, unfortunate that we're not going to see that one seed, you know, finale, trying to see going down to the last day or anything. But
I was kind of hoping. Well, this could still happen in theory, but it's very unlikely at this point. I want to see the Jazz play the Lakers.
Oh, my God.
Because I want to see the world burn. I know for a fact, if LeBron is healthy for that, the Jazz would probably lose that series for whatever reason.
I mean, there's still the world where we could see it even as the Jazz are the one seed, because if the Lakers blow the first game of the play-in and win the second game, then they're the 8 seed. Also, how funny would it be if the Lakers were the 8 seed in the playoffs?
You know, it would be funny because this implies the Warriors don't get blown out by the Lakers, which I don't think happens. But, yeah, that'd be interesting. I think, see, the Jazz will win that. I think that's a very predictable outcome. Suns Lakers, though, I think is going to be a bloodbath, and in a good way for any NBA fans. So I'm looking forward to it, but I really did kind of want to see the Jazz just get swept by the Lakers, like a 1-8 kind of sweep, like something really sadistic, because why not?
Man, even with LeBron, though, right now, a sweep from the Lakers in the first round sounds near impossible, as the Lakers, let's talk about them for a second now, they have fallen into this play-in like we're talking about. Portland has won the season series against the Lakers. They hold a full game advantage for the 6th seed in the playoffs. LeBron has missed the last few. He could potentially return tomorrow. Are the Lakers going to be stuck in the play-in? That's the first question. Do we think that they're going to be able to crawl their way back out this late in the season?
They will not crawl their way back into 6th.
Okay. I think I agree with you, especially because Dame, like I always say, has some of the best second halves to the season ever. I don't think they're going to be able to catch back up to Portland.
I also going on, I think Portland owns the tiebreaker too. So they got to like outpace them.
That's what I was trying to allude to with the season series, is that Portland owns that head-to-head record with the Lakers. So if it's a tie, you know, they're effectively two full games behind at this point, because they need a straight up better record than Portland to be able to be six. So I think they're going to be seven, because I don't think they're going to lose all of their games. I don't think the Warriors are going to win all their games to make that flip. But they need these last four games of the regular season, four or five games, are going to be vital to the Lakers, because they don't have to win all of them. They're stuck in the 7-8 seed no matter what, pretty much. And, you know, home court advantage for that's only going to matter so much. But they need to use these four games, five games, to get back in sync. You know, I don't know how many games LeBron, Davis, and Drummond have played together, but I'm assuming it's less than five. That's terrifying. You're not going to get Schroeder back until the playoffs start, and you need to keep that in mind. They need to get some kind of consistency on the court in the end of this regular season, and this is something nobody wants to talk about, they really could be in trouble of losing one, if not both of both of their plans is a stretch, because I don't think the Grizzlies or the Spurs can beat them in a game, but they're going to struggle in the first round if they don't have something to base everything off of.
Right. Just, yeah, it's, I want to see what happens this year with LeBron. Because I know everyone loves LeBron, and I just wanted the best players of all time. Let's not disregard that statement. But I don't know. Even as a guy, like, I would say you're a LeBron stan. You definitely root for him. You think he's one of the best of all time. And, you know, as do I. Like, the way he has handled himself because his injury has been, like, kind of soft. I know he's old, but, like, come on, he got injuries. Like, he sounded like he was dying. He's like, I think this is the end for me. I got to take better care of my body, which, you know, granted, he's getting older and yeah, he's going to have to be more cautious about it. But like, he was out for, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. He's like, I think this is the end of the line for me, boys.
Yeah. There's this quote he had that was like, I'm never going to get back to 100%. But like, I would never expect you to get back to your peak form at, what is it, 38 years old at this point, 37 years old. Like, I would, like, your peak has changed. You just get back to the point of the smartest and most basketball player out there, which is still very possible for this old of a LeBron James. But I will say that if he is worried about his body not physically being ready, that truly is the one chink in his armor. That is the one way that he could effectively not be the best player on the court on any given game. And that is what any team going against him would need to take advantage of. You know, see if he's slow on the defensive end, go at him. If he's sluggish on offense, force him to be the leader and like not just passing, but force him into some bad shots, into some tough situations. It is so odd to say that a team could take advantage of LeBron James, but if he's not physically ready, that's the only chance teams have to beat the Lakers.
I gotta be honest. I'm on this whole like hell bent. I want to see the world burn raid today. I want to see LeBron lose in the first round just to watch the reports about his legacy being tarnished. Actually, wait, I have a question. If he loses, like he may just get eliminated before the playing games happen, does LeBron's argument just go poof?
No.
But come on. Come on.
First of all, like,
come on.
He's hurt. I'm not saying that's the only excuse, but like, he's clearly not going to be at 100% in these play-in games. I will say it is a huge not necessarily asterisk, but it's a huge negative for sure. Like, I would never expect LeBron James or Michael Jordan to lose an individual game meant making it out of the playoffs. I would never expect either of them to lose that game. So if LeBron does lose that game, it is something that people will deserve to give him a little bit of slander for, but with the caveat of knowing that he was older and a little bit hurt. But Michael Jordan lost in the first round of the playoffs before.
Michael Jordan also lost when he had no one on his team, though.
Like, sure. Sure. I'm not giving excuses for players like Davis and Drummond. Like, this team is talented enough where there is really no way they should lose in the first round. Especially because the only reason they fell this far was because LeBron James got hurt. So if he can get to some standing of healthy, like, especially if it is Utah, because I think they're the weaker first round matchup for the Lakers between them and Phoenix. As long as LeBron is some semblance of himself, even if it takes seven, like, I still don't really know if I see a way where the Jazz come out on that on top of that series.
Well, yeah, it would be the Suns in this case, assuming they don't drop, but I don't know. I think the Suns could give him a run for their. It depends if Chris Paul is going to be healthy for it.
Yeah, but that's a good point. I just, you know, Michael Bridges is a good defender. I just don't know if they have someone that can really match up against Davis or LeBron per se, because like you could put Ayton on Davis, but he can't guard Anthony Davis. And then you have nobody that can guard LeBron as long as he's healthy. So that's my big concern with the Suns, is just like their two forwards match up very poorly against the Lakers two forwards.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to be able to stop Devin Booker in that series.
Unless they just straight up put LeBron on him.
Sure, but yeah, maybe. I don't know. I really do think Chris Paul, though, in that case, would just tear them apart.
Yeah, how much of an effect? Like, Chris Paul is going to have a massive effect on this series regardless, but how soon the Lakers get Schroeder back will be a big tell of how even further his impact. Because if Schroeder's not on the court, that's the only guard that the Lakers really have to, you can feel confident putting on Chris Paul. So if you have to put in Caruso or Wesley Matthews or Ben McLemore, that is a much worse option than Dennis Schroeder.
I think the other thing too, just the depth of the Suns is something that really hasn't been hinted upon this year. I know they're young, but having like Jay Crowder, I don't know if he's playing on the bench or off the bench, or Dario Saric. Like, there's a lot that their lineups can do, and the Lakers are not deep by any means. Like, they have one of the best starting lineups in the league, but that depth, I think, is going to bite them the ass a bit.
No, I agree with you. Whoever's bench shows up, yeah, that could be a big tell.
It's can LeBron play 40 minutes, or is he too injured? Michael Jordan would have played 40 minutes, Robbie.
Let's see if LeBron does answer the bell. I won't defend him. He defends himself. One LeBron stan can still always hope, I guess. Sure. All right, let's talk about the East now here for a second. The Sixers seem to be in command of the number one seed. They're about 2.5 up on Brooklyn right now. They should be good. They're healthy. Simmons is back in the lineup. Matisse is playing some of his best defense, and Joe is doing Joe things. Milwaukee has actually put some pressure on Brooklyn for that two seed. I think they're just either a half game or a full game back right now. They had actually taken the two seed for a day before falling back down. So that could be something to note, but I still think it's going to go Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee. The Knicks seem relatively locked in at 4 and the Hawks at 5. But this is where it's interesting. 5 and 6 could still switch if the Heat can get hot, but what we're really talking about here is going to be 6 and 7 between Heat and Celtics. The Heat beat Boston. They almost blew a massive lead. Beat Boston by to take a 2 lead for the season. Series between the two conclude tomorrow. Winner will the tiebreaker. At this point, Miami is being given an 89% chance to not get stuck in that play-in. We're meeting Boston, most likely the team to be playing in that 7 matchup. First of all, is the Celtics, what is the chance the Celtics can surpass the Heat with so few games left? And are the Celtics team that could potentially lose these play-ins just based off of the randomness of the bottom of the East?
Well, the Celtics will not pass the Heat. They got to win 3 of their next 4, and that's assuming the Heat would lose out. So he basically need to win one more game and they are locked at 5 or 6. Like, they'll have to fight with the Hawks. This is tough because the bottom of the East is weird,
right?
I wouldn't want to play the Pacers in the playoffs. I'm not saying you couldn't beat them, but like, that's not a great matchup. The Wizards have been on a tear lately. I'm not saying like you never want to count out Russell Westbrook, but the Wizards are all right. The Hornets are kind of back too with LaMelo, and then you have the Celtics. Like, those are the bottom 4 teams in the East. Those are all just kind of awful matchups. Like, that's a bloodbath, basically, is what I'm getting at here. In the West, it's very clear cut. You have Lakers Warriors will probably make it out. I'm not saying that's a lock, but most likely case, that's what's going to happen. This, like, you know, Wizards Pacers is going to be a tough matchup. Like, maybe the Wizards could win that. Maybe the Pacers could. And then they got to go through the Hornets or the Celtics. And I don't know. I think it will end up being the Celtics Hornets, but it's not a fun few games to play for anyone. And then after that, say you do win, you're playing the Sixers or the Nets, like also a bloodbath.
Yeah, that's what nobody's really talking about. Is like that. I think the East play-in is going to be the more fun play-in to watch. Like you said, it's going to be these just everybody giving it everything they have. It could be a blowout still, but you know these teams are going to be. They all think that they can beat each other because they're all a little inconsistent, and none of them. They all have something to prove, though. They all have that chip on their shoulder. For Boston. With Miami, you kind of knew what it's been all year. It was like they're not quite as good at rebounding, not quite as good as shooting. But if they can get hot and consistent, you still saw the pieces of that team from last year. But Boston, it's been different. It's pretty much just been like if their stars aren't doing anything, they're losing. That's it. They don't really have a good bench by any means. And against teams like Charlotte, against teams like Indiana and Washington, well, a little less Washington, Indiana and Charlotte here. Those are two teams that other than their like top two or three guys, everyone on the court is just a dude trying to earn their spot in the rotation. And that is scary when it comes to one individual game that matters when you're a team like Boston, that if it's not Tatum or Brown or Kemba scoring all your points, who the hell is going to score for you? Like genuinely, who do you have that can score the basketball that you can go to for a bucket outside of those three players? Whereas Charlotte, Indiana, it's kind of just like, if you're open, you're going to get a shot. We're not going to specifically try and send it to Domantas Sabonis or Gordon Hayward. We're just going to work it around until somebody gets a good look. That's the kind of play style that I think if you can catch Boston on a rough night, they could really fall out of this quickly.
Yeah, and the inefficiencies of Boston this year have been really well documented, mostly by us. But I don't know. Like, there is a world – like, it's hard for the 7 seed to follow the playoffs. Like, there's a cushion for that, which is why these playing games are, to a degree, like, they're proper. I think the Celtics will make it to the playoffs, but you're right. They could catch them on a bad night. Maybe they'd fall to 8 instead of 7, and, you know, that's potentially problematic for the Celtics. Not that they'd beat the Nets, but they will get killed by the Sixers. Like, the Sixers will destroy them.
The Sixers want the Celtics so badly. The Sixers want the Celtics. And it needs to happen. I want Charlotte to win that game. A, because I still think Charlotte could randomly steal a game or two from Brooklyn. And B, because, yeah, I just want that Philly-Boston first-round bloodbath of – I don't think it'd be a four-game sweep just because – even though how good the Sixers are and how inconsistent the Celtics are, I think a rivalry like that warrants the Celtics winning at least one game. But, man, that sounds like a walk in the park for the Sixers in the first round.
I want it. I will consistently call the Celtics cowards if they fall out of the playoffs.
God, I don't know if they can really fall to 8 at this point just because Charlotte is still under 500. But either way, That's what the East play-in is looking like at this point. So Miami, pretty much, if they beat Boston tomorrow, they're pretty much going to be locked not being in the play-in. And then that makes me, as a Heat fan, feel very good. Those four teams in the Wizards, the Pacers, the Hornets, and the Celtics, those could be some really fun games. All right, a couple more topics here for the NBA. Luka Doncic saw video of him getting ejected for hitting Colin Sexton in the groin area. Did not get awarded a technical foul, but he is just one technical away from receiving one of those one-game suspensions you get after this specific amount. I believe it's 15 technicals are received throughout the course of a year. The last time this came into play in the playoffs was when Draymond Green sat out game 6 of the NBA Finals, the famous year where they blew the 3-1 lead. So I'm bringing this up because Luka is a young, hot-headed player, like you mentioned pre-show. What are the chances Luka gets suspended in the playoffs because of this and Dallas severely suffers?
Well, It could definitely happen. Luka will get a technical in the playoffs. It's really going to come down to who, like, it's going to come down to when he gets that technical, because we're still, Robbie and I are still unsure how the technical rule works. If it like resets, or if you're given, because I don't think it would be once you get 16, like every technical you get is like a game suspension, because that is a compoundingly bad. But I don't think it fully resets either. I don't. It's pretty hard to get 16 technicals in the playoffs, no matter how much of a hothead you are. But I could see a world where Luka is fine the rest of the season, gets a technical like the second game of the playoffs, you know, tight matchup with like the, we'll say the Nuggets in this case. And yeah, it potentially screws them over. I don't know. They have a great chance of making it out of the first round this year just because the Nuggets are banged up. But, you know, Luka is very passionate, but can be a bit of a hothead sometimes. And I really do think, actually, I guarantee you'll get a technical during the playoffs. Like, that's kind of a given, unless they're sweeping.
My question, so who's four right now in the West? Is it Denver or is it the Clippers?
Good question. The Nuggets are four.
Okay, because if it's the Clippers, Luka will get a suspension after game one.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anybody remembers that series from last year, like, the Marcus Morris was explicitly going after Luka Doncic's like legs and knees. Like, there, he's gonna get into a physical altercation with a Clippers player. So I would be very worried if that was the first round matchup.
Yeah,
if
I was a Dallas fan. Trez was calling him like a baby or whatever. Like, yeah. I don't blame Luka for like wanting to fight each and every one of them, because they were just talking a lot of shit to him, but it's going to have, if he has to play the Clippers, and the Clippers are one game up on the Nuggets. I don't know how the season series works for the tiebreaker, but there is a world where he could play the Clippers, and that spells disaster for everyone's sanity on the mat. Like, Mark Cuban's going to hate himself if he has to play the Clippers again.
100%. That being said, as an NBA fan, that's the first round matchup I want to see. Also, because I feel like a really fun first round matchup could be Portland versus Denver, because especially without Jamal Murray, it's pretty much just who's going to affect the game more between Nick Jokic and Dame Lillard. And that sounds like an awesome series. So that's what the playoffs are looking like. One more thing I'm going to get to here. It's a fun one. J. Cole has signed in the African Basketball League with, I don't know the exact name, but it's a Rwandan club. There's always been talk about J. Cole being really good at basketball. You see videos on Twitter and all that stuff. Some guys have vouched for him to be in the NBA, maybe not quite there yet, but Steph, he's playing professional basketball. I believe he's signing it's a 3-6 game contract, if I read the article correctly, and they'll go from there. But kind of cool thing to see famous icon like J. Cole getting to play some professional basketball.
I don't disagree, but why the hell couldn't any team sign him to like a G League contract?
So my one concern is probably his physical height. He probably is just like too small to guard.
He's
6'2". Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's my height.
Oh, in that case, there's absolutely no excuse. He might just not be as good at basketball as everybody says he is, but all the stuff I've seen is like he can ball. So
listen, I know we're not trying to make a mockery of the sport. And J. Cole wouldn't, by the way, would not make a mockery of any G League team. In the NBA, he'd probably get killed because he's like my size. Now, like in minor league baseball, they do this all the time where they'll put like literal celebrities in who have not touched a bat in their lives and have them play baseball and just kind of see what happens.
Timmy.
Yeah. Like Pat McAfee's played games for like single A teams, or you even have MLB stars on like rehab assignments playing down. Like, no one really cares. So to me, I think you could have had him in like a 10-day contract in the G League. Have him play for Charlotte's G League affiliate and go from there. Granted, I'm sure people will be a little upset because they're trying for opportunities in the NBA, but bring more fans in, more revenue. I see no problem with it. That's but good for him for signing. Like, he genuinely wants to play basketball if he's going to Rwanda to like play. So I'd do it.
Just a fun one. Hope y'all enjoyed that a little bit. But yeah, J. Cole trying to make strides for his professional basketball career. All right, that's what we got for the news segment today. We're going to stick on the topic of basketball, though, here. As for our middle segment, we are going to divulge who we believe are going to be the three all-NBA teams. I might have worded this poorly, but who we think is going to be on all of the all three of the NBA teams. The way I've kind of done this is I'm just, instead of doing the classic point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center, I'm essentially just doing two backcourt members and three frontcourt members. So two guards and three of the combination of small forward, power forward, center. Alex, start with you. Who do you have on your all NBA first team for this year?
All right. Give me like 1 sec to start thinking through this. So I did my best to do it by position because I know it's how they do it. The way Robbie's going to do it with like kind of like an NBA all-star where it's guards and forwards, I think is a lot easier in terms of like justification for why, because the center position is a little iffy. Like we all know why, because of the MVP race being so close between two of the best centers in the game. So I'm going to start off basic here. Point guard, Steph Curry. Please put him in there. The man is literally willing the Warriors into the playoffs as an 8 seed. Please, to anyone listening, put him in there. The man is still an incredible basketball player, probably the best shooter of all time in the NBA. He deserves to be in that conversation. Now, when I originally thought of this, I had a different choice, but my other guard is going to be Luka. There's a solid argument for Damian Lillard to be in there. I don't disagree with that. However, Luka is listed as a guard, apparently. If he was a forward, this makes my life a lot easier. But I think what Luka has done for the Mavericks, I think he deserves the guard position. And now here's my personal hell. Who do I pick at small forward? I really don't know, Robbie. But you know what? We're going to do the easy cop-out answer. I don't think he's going to end up getting it, but like we got to give it to LeBron James. I know he's missed so much time. I love Kawhi Leonard, but I don't think I can make a legitimate justification for him this year. I'm going to still say LeBron, but like the injuries are definitely the one thing keeping him off this list for sure. I think he'll be a second or third team, quite frankly. For Giannis Antetokounmpo, no real gripes there. Reigning MVP, done a lot for his team. And then I think for center, it's going to come down to who wins the MVP. I think Jokic is going to win the MVP. Even as a Sixers fan, I loved Embiid, but I think the fact he was hurt, coupled with the fact that Jamal Murray tore his ACL and the Nuggets were still relevant and still doing well with Jokic in the lineup, I think fans are going to give him the MVP. Disappointing, of course, as an Embiid fan, but I think whoever wins the MVP is in that spot. I think it's going to be Jokic. So those are my starting five all-NBA team.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I have a lot of similarities in my list. I'm going to be honest with you. I completely forgot about Luka Doncic. He is just not on any of my teams. And I'm looking at all of my teams, and I'm going to keep it that way. So that's going to be the biggest difference between you and my list. Is you got Luka on the first team, which I have no disrespect for, especially with how well they've done in the second half of the year. But I'm going to be justifying the hell out of these guards towards the end of this. But all right, so I'll stick with the top of the top. Steph Curry, absolutely all NBA first team. The Warriors now in that top 8 seed. Steph Curry, the league leader in points per game, just under 32 points. Definitely one of the guards on that first team. And like you mentioned, you had Luka edging out Dame. I have Dame as the other guard here on the first team. I think what he means to Portland is essentially everything, because if Damian Lillard wasn't on the Portland Trailblazers, I genuinely think they would probably be the worst team in basketball, or at least very close. The dude can score from any spot in the half court and even a couple steps beyond. He's essentially like, I don't want to say a poor man Steph Curry, but he is like one, you know, if we're talking about 2K rankings, like Steph is a 97 and Dame's a 96. Like it's like, it's that close. Moving forward, so yeah, this is where mine is going to probably differ from most of the lists you're going to see. I can't justify not having the top two MVP candidates on the All-NBA first team. I can't do it. I believe Joel Embiid is going to be the MVP. I believe he is a lock for the All-NBA first team. And if we were doing the standard 1 through 5 positions, I would have Embiid as my center. But the other two front court members I have on my first team are Giannis Antetokounmpo, like you said, former MVP. Bucks have been good all year, 3 seed pretty much all year. And I also have Nikola Jokic. I don't know if the NBA is going to let this work this way. I don't think they will. But I can't, like I said, I can't justify not having the players having the two best seasons this year, not both being on the All-NBA first team. And that's kind of why I elected to do this as guards and forwards instead of, you know, the one through five, because Jokic, like you said, is your front runner to win the MVP. I mean, he has meant so much to Denver, especially when Jamal Murray went down with the injury. And Embiid, I believe, is the most physically dominant player we have in the league right now. And this is the first time I'm going to say that, including LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo. So I can't split them up. I originally had Embiid on the first team and Jokic on the second team, but I have changed and I'm going to stick with this. So Lillard, Curry, Giannis, Jokic, Embiid is going to be my first team.
All right. Well, I mean, I was actually doing just a bit of research, and according to the Washington Post, the All NBA ballot lists Joel Embiid as both a center and a forward. So he can qualify as a power forward. So yeah. I'm going to retroactively change my opinion because that makes my life easier. LeBron, get off my team, put Joel Embiid on the first team as a forward. And there was my list. So we have Curry, Luka, Giannis, Embiid, Jokic. Those are my five. I think I agree with you. I really do. Like, I don't disagree about Damian Lillard. His value is very underappreciated, but I do genuinely believe he will be snubbed from the first team no matter what he does.
It does happen to Dame quite a bit. He's made, I think, at least one first team in his day. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see who that. I think Curry's pretty much a lock for one of the guard spots. So we'll see if it's Luka, Curry, or another name that ends up breaking that list. And, you know, let's bring up some of those names now. So let's move down here into the second team. This is where it's going to get interesting because, like we mentioned at the beginning, we don't really know where LeBron's going to fit in here. And like I said right at the beginning of this segment that I don't have Luka Doncic on here at all. So start with you again. Who is your All-NBA second team?
Oh, God. All right. Let's, like, guards, point guards, whatever. I think you have to put Damian Lillard on this list. And yeah. I'm going to say, I don't know. I want to say something so controversial, but I'm not going to. I'm going to say Donovan Mitchell sneaks it out at the second team.
Damn.
That's it's a spicy take, but I'm going to put actually. No, I'm not. I'm going to be even spicier and say Russell Westbrook takes the second team.
Wow, that is spicy.
That's okay, spicy.
Wow. All
I think right, he has willed the Wizards back into, like, slim relevancy. The fact he's putting up so many triple-doubles, kind of like his MVP season, like, it's not worthwhile for him getting MVP votes, but very underappreciated. So those are my guards. You're not going to like them. That's fine.
No, that's okay. I mean, Dame, you know, if he doesn't make the first team, he will be on the second team. So I got nothing wrong with that. And I'm sorry, you said you're sticking with Russell Westbrook. Okay.
Well, Russell Westbrook.
I don't have anything against Russell Westbrook other than the fact that the Wizards still suck. And I always say, I don't know how much of that is actually on Russell Westbrook or not.
Zero.
I don't think that's true at all.
Zero.
So, okay, my guard, I really think I need to put Luka on here somewhere. I think it's going to be absurd if Luka Doncic isn't on here.
You have
so
to put
I am on I am going to make some changes here. So, my first guard that is an absolute lock for the second team is Chris Paul. I don't think that's a question. Like I said when we were talking about the All-Stars, he completely and utterly changed how this team works, how good they can be, how high their ceiling is. And that has shown all year as they have been, you know, top two or three and even at one for a little bit. Chris Paul is the smartest point guard in basketball. I'm going to definitively say that. And if he can stay healthy, they're going to have a lot of playoff success so long as the Lakers don't accidentally crush them in the first round. Yeah, Chris Paul is the first guard. And after a lot of just thought here in my head in the last few minutes, I am going to have Luka Doncic be on the second team as the other guard. I think the second half he's had is incredible. I think the impact he has on Dallas is pretty much the same, if not a little bit less than what Dame has on Portland. I think it's impossible for me to say Luka doesn't belong on this list. So I'm going to put Luka as my other guard. So Chris Paul and Luka Doncic are my second team guards.
All right. I got to be honest. I'm thinking about this and I can't actually justify why Russell Westbrook will go above Chris Paul. We're switching out Russell Westbrook with Chris Paul. I wanted to be a little controversial, but there's no reason, because Chris Paul actually has the second place team in the West with the Suns, has done quite a lot for them because the team was very similar last year, if not almost identical, except with the plug and play of Chris Paul. So I agree with you on that. We just have Lillard and Doncic switched, which I think is kind of reasonable. We'll have to see about that. Forward wise, I think Kawhi Leonard will be a second team vote.
Yep.
I think if LeBron's not in the third team, he's on the second team. So we're going to say that. And then Rudy Gobert being like the token center left, we're going to put him at second team.
Yeah, it was nice for a second because, like, if we could have definitively decided between Embiid and Jokic, like, it would have been really nice to just have those three, like Embiid, Jokic, Gobert, 1, 2, 3, however you would order it. But, like, Gobert was always definitively three. And I still think Bam Adebayo is a better center than Rudy Gobert, but I think if you're talking about this year specifically and the success that the Utah Jazz have had, Rudy Gobert is the third best center in terms of this season. So Gobert is definitely going to be the second team center here if both Jokic and Embiid in the first team. Those forwards, I have exactly the same. I got Kawhi Leonard is pretty much a lock for the second team. Like you said, LeBron could fluctuate, but I don't think there's a world where LeBron doesn't make at least one of these All-NBA teams. And if you're going to put him third, I think you just have to put him second. He's just that good. He means that much to the Lakers. So yeah, Kawhi, LeBron, and then Rudy Gobert.
All right. Third team. This is where it's going to get very dicey fast.
Real spicy.
All right. I'm gonna rattle off my list just based off of thought. So Russell Westbrook does deserve to be in this list. I'm putting him as the point guard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hold on. Here's a question. What do you consider Jimmy Butler to play as? Is he a shooting guard or is he a forward?
I am calling him a small forward. I don't know what the NBA considers him, but I am a Heat fan. I watch Heat basketball all of the time. And the starting lineup is point guard Kendrick Nunn, shooting guard Duncan Robinson, small forward Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
That is where he starts. That is where I'm ranking him for this.
So with that information, we're going to go Donovan Mitchell as our guard. So on the third team. Forwards. I think Paul George is going to be on the list.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. I think Jason Tatum's going to be on the list.
Oh, I hate you.
And I think Bam's going to be the center.
Okay. You got some back at the end there.
But I know you don't like that, but I think Paul George has had a more complete season than Jimmy Butler.
I think that's bullshit. I think he's just played like 8 more games.
Exactly. And that's what's going to sway it.
I think that I forget what reporter just came out and said this, but somebody was like, Jimmy Butler is having quietly one of the most underrated seasons of all time. And if he had played the full season, I would fully agree with that. His issue is the issue with LeBron James, but it happened in the beginning of the year. It's like their standing on this list falls and rises based off of the fact that they missed time. But the Heat are a different, I mean, obviously you're a different team when your superstar plays, but the Heat, like, there's a different energy when Jimmy Butler is or isn't on the court. I don't know. Hold on. Let me. Okay. I'm going to listen to you for a second here. So you had, it was Westbrook, Mitchell, Tatum, Adebayo, and Paul George.
Yeah. Okay. The one caveat I want to say to that is I don't know how people are going to perceive James Harden. Like, I know your thoughts on him, but he had arguably MVP stats after his blockbuster trade in January. The problem is he's been injured for so long, so we've all forgot about him.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he falls into that category of, like, if he had stayed healthy, probably would have been a first team player.
Yes,
but I think he's just missed too much time. Durant obviously has missed too much time. It's going to be weird because the Nets have this chance to win the NBA championship because of all three of their superstars, and none of them make the All NBA teams.
Oh my God, wait. No, hold on. Wait, No. What about Kevin Durant?
Kevin Durant's played like, what, less than 10 games this year?
I know.
No, don't even. Don't, Like Kevin Durant has not played. Like if we're talking about LeBron James and Jimmy Butler barely making these teams because of how little they've played, then Kevin Durant doesn't even deserve to be in the conversation.
That's probably fair.
Because he has played less than both of them. I don't care how good the Nets have been. Sorry. That's my, Kevin Durant does not deserve to be in this conversation. Before I try and really nitpick about this, I'm just going to give out my third team. So Russell Westbrook is the first guard that I have. He's averaging a monster triple double this year. The Wizards suck, but he is not totally to blame. And he just tied Oscar Robertson for the most triple doubles in NBA history. He is probably going to break that by season's end.
Yes.
Absolutely needs to be in the All-NBA conversation. The other guard, I literally have both of them listed right now because I don't know who to pick between Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell. I think I have to pick Donovan Mitchell for the sake of he is the best player on the best team in the NBA, and his impact to Utah might actually be more than Ben Simmons to Philly, but if it is, it's by like the tiniest little increment. And I also don't think that Donovan Mitchell is a better player than Ben Simmons. But if we're, again, just talking about this year, I think it has to be Donovan Mitchell. So I'm going to say Russell Westbrook and Donovan Mitchell are my third team guards. I'm sorry, Ben Simmons. I really, really tried. Forwards and centers, Jimmy Butler. Again, I think just his impact on the Heat, and now that the Heat have kind of almost officially risen out of the play-in tournament, deserves to be here. I think Julius Randle of the Knicks is even more of a lock than Jimmy Butler, though. The Knicks aren't by any means going to make too terribly much noise in the playoffs, but he has been the best player on this team, who is the 4 seed. They've been consistent, and he's an all-star. I think Randle has to be on these teams. And then my forward center, as much as I wanted to put Bam on here, I couldn't justify putting two Heat players on here given the struggles. So I went with Domantas Sabonis of the Pacers. He's had a monster season. Nobody likes talking about him, but he's incredible. And also kind of fits that bill of could play forward, could play center. So I thought it would work out pretty well. So my third team being Westbrook, Mitchell, Jimmy, Randle, and Domantas Sabonis.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I don't think that's bad. I think a few people who got left off, Zion Williamson, I don't think deserves an All-NBA team, but like having a phenomenal second year in the NBA. 100%. Another one, Harden potentially, but that's more of a if he was like, I don't know what's going to happen with him. I left off Julius Randle. That Julius Randle could definitely sneak in there, and actually looking back on it, could definitely deserve something. It's going to be tough though for forwards. Forwards, I mean, granted, that's like one of the most important positions in basketball, but there are a lot of good ones this year. Like LeBron may honestly get thrusted out of something. It ain't easy. It ain't easy being tall and good.
No, it truly isn't. Like the forward, I mean, I actually honestly, I think I had more trouble with the guards just because there are so many injuries and so many great guards, but the forwards, it's like, it's the race is so close because there's only a few that have, like Giannis and Kawhi are pretty much the only ones that have consistently been doing what they've been doing all year. LeBron, Jimmy, Durant, it's been all over the place. But yeah, I the ones that you had that I didn't, Bam Adebayo, Jason Tatum, definitely, you know, honorable mentions to an extent. I think Kyrie Irving is the closest. Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons are going to be my two big honorable mentions. There's just not enough guard spots to give out, unfortunately. And I think Mitchell has proven based off team success he deserves to be here, and Westbrook on individual success that he deserves to be here a little more than either of those two players. Bradley Beal, he's can't play. If he could play any amount of defense, he'd be on this list, no question. But he doesn't deserve it this year. And the same goes for Devin Booker. And then also, like you said, Zion, great year. He'll get here eventually. He even could slip in over DeMontis if the Pelicans sneak into that 10 seed, but at that point I would say Bam over him anyway then. But yeah, those are some of the names that are not quite there, but still excellent seasons on all accounts. All right, what are the any big discrepancies here we need to talk about, or do we pretty much hit it all?
I think I'm looking forward to seeing the All-NBA teams because it always provides more drama in the world of sports, but I think we'll have to see. There's a few more games left, and obviously it's only a regular season award, but the playoffs kind of do come into play. Let's be honest with ourselves here.
Yeah, I like I hope it's one of those, like, it doesn't get released until the end, but like it is actually voted on before the playoffs start, because then the playoffs can't play into effect. But if it's not that, then yeah, the playoffs of course come into effect. That's just how it goes. Anyway, yeah, we'll see what these are, how well our lists did. I always love the All-NBA teams. I think it's a better idea of how the season went than what the All-Stars always read, because again, we weren't talking about any Heat players in the All-Star game. We were all talking about all the Nets players, and that kind of flipped at this point. So we'll see how that goes. And as always, we're going to end here with some superlatives for this past week. We will start with the MVP, and going off of this discussion, my MVP this week was Russell Westbrook. As I just mentioned, he tied Big O for the most triple doubles in NBA history, 181 career triple doubles. He is just one away from having that be his very own record, which has to be one of the most impressive records somebody can hold in terms of NBA standing. So MVP for this week, the Washington Wizards point guard, Russ, has fought and battled his way into that All-NBA discussion.
Okay, fair enough. I think, honestly, we don't give boxing enough love here. I'm giving mine to Canelo Alvarez for a vicious knockout on Billy Joe Saunders. Please go watch the highlight. He is like not taunting, but he's like celebrating before he even hits Billy Joe, and just vicious knockout. I know I dissed violence earlier, but we all love a good knockout. So props Canelo, one of the best boxers of all time.
I mean, that sport is fighting. If you can't get into it for that sport, then just like, I don't even know. You should be listening to this show at the very least.
Fair enough.
But no, I like that one. Definitely got to give some more love to boxing. Most disappointing of the week. Who do you have?
Cavaliers. You've been 0-10 in your last 10. I know you're the bottom of the league, but like, what happened? The Cavs were kind of red hot. There was like hope that Garland and Colin Sexton would be decent. Now you got Kevin Love like being depressed and wanting out again. Like we've led full circle. That's how the Cavs go. They start off hot and will always beat the Sixers, and they slowly go back to their normal phase. They keep going. Kevin Love wants out or hates the team. Keep going. Restart the season. Keep going. Up. The cycle repeats.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really good way to put it. Yeah, no, because we were talking at the beginning of the year, it's like, oh, is this Cleveland team legit? And I'm pretty sure you were just like, no, they're not.
And they're now 14th in the league, so I am a correct genius.
I will say, though, one part of it has to be the fact that there is a very large difference between the skill level of Jarrett Allen and Andre Drummond.
Yes.
But that's all I'll say there. Cleveland, they got some work to do, and please trade Kevin Love. All right. My disappointing for this week goes to the Kansas City Royals. You know, again, they're standing at the top of the AL was unexpected, and you could have predicted that they were going to fall at some point, but to fall this hard, this fast, is a little sad, because I always like seeing the small market teams doing better than like the White Sox and the Red Sox and the Yankees. And now, unfortunately, their season is probably just going to be teetering around 500. Jorge Soler can't hit a baseball anymore. It's terrible. I love the Royals, but you disappointed me, because man, 8 straight games. That's more than this past week. Like you haven't won since I last talked about you guys. That's not good. All right, moving on. The bad boy of the week. I don't really know if there's even anything else that qualifies other than Tom Wilson of the Capitals, all those penalty minutes. I'm not just giving it to Tom Wilson. I'm going to give it to the entire organizations of the Capitals and the Rangers. But that whole situation is essentially just everybody involved with my bad boys of the week.
That's quite a good one, Robbie. I think I'm going to have to also go with Tom Wilson, just because punching a dude in the back of the head's not a good thing by any means. But also, I have to give it a bit to Russell Westbrook. Been a bad boy, dropping triple doubles like nobody's business. The Wizards are still not great. Let's not disguise that. But it's a start, and it is good to see Russell Westbrook have like kind of doing what he does best. But Tom Wilson's kind of a scumbag, let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, but I say, that's just not a good look. Punching a dude in the back of the head, can't see you. That's some crap. But,
maybe Luka too, you know, getting a little groin punch in there. Even a bad boy.
Got some good ones this week for the bad boy. All right, moving down. Is there any moment that stood out to you as the top one for this past week?
You know, one thing that really stood out to me that probably we'll never ever talk about more was the Pelicans Hornets game. Just seeing Lonzo and LaMelo going after each other, like that sort of sibling rivalry, like really close game. The Pelicans ended up pulling it out. But toward the end of the game, I think I want to say the Pelicans are up like 3 or 2 points, like very close game. Lonzo on LaMelo. LaMelo's trying to poke the ball. They're diving for loose balls. I don't know. That to me is very reminiscent of like rec basketball with your friends or just that sort of driveway basketball. And I don't know. That to me is like an awesome moment, especially to see two brothers who are starters for their respective teams. Like, I don't know. That's got to be cool for LeVar or any sports fan or anyone who's known the Ball brothers for a while. So that's my moment of the week. Some brotherly love.
I really like that one, actually. I'm really glad you brought that up. That idea of like the camaraderie, like that rec league feel, but also the fact that they're brothers, like such a cool thing to be able to see siblings really go at each other at the highest level. One of those moments that like you just appreciate as a sports fan, even if you don't like basketball, even if you hate either of those teams, like you can appreciate those guys going at each other at the highest level. It's just a cool thing to see. Love that. My moment of the week goes out to the Panthers rookie cornerback JC Ham. Nothing happened in like a play or anything like that, but he has decided to change his number to number 8 to honor the late Kobe Bryant. I'm a big fan of making tributes like that. You know, not a number he ever wore before, but with the new rule that players can wear like a more wide range of numbers, he decided to take advantage of that, and he's going to honor one of the greatest athletes from our generation. I'm sure inspired him in many ways like he did other people. So I just love to see that. Thought it was really cool. So shout out JC Ham. That was my moment of the week here. One final award is going to be the Return of the King, and who I have, I don't know if I've used him for this award before or not already this year, but Buster Posey. Like, this dude is going absolutely nuts. Like, he's not just the best catcher in baseball. There is a very legitimate argument that he is one of the best players in baseball right now. The one knock is that he doesn't play more than 2 games in a row. He plays 2 games and then he gets a day off, plays 2 games. That's how it has gone all year for him, but it has had so much success. First of all, the Giants, I think, are still the number 2 seed in the NL. Buster Posey is batting 400 with a 471 on base percentage, 8 home runs and 12 RBIs. And the dude doesn't play more than back-to-back. Like, it's nuts. It's absurd. So I had to give Buster Posey the shout out. Last year, he sat out last season. And the year before that, I think he only had 7 total home runs. So Buster Posey is doing something right now. And he is really helping the Giants succeed. So my Return of the King goes to the guy behind the plate for the San Francisco Giants.
Good stuff. Love to hear Buster Posey's name. It's been years, it feels like. I got to go with AD. Anthony Davis is back better than ever. Had a miraculous game against the Suns last night and pulled out a desperately needed win for the Lakers. So literally as he had a dunk to end the game, he was towing everyone. He's back. So he gets my Return of the King. And depending on how LeBron's health is, like we always talked about, the Lakers are always a force to be reckoned with. But if AD's healthy, which we were very much questioning earlier, that's a scary team.
Yes, it is. 42 points, nothing to be scoffed at. Great Return of the King there, Buster Posey and Anthony Davis, respectively. That's what we have for you guys this week. As always, we hope you enjoyed. We hope that All-NBA debate got you fired up and excited for the awards. We will be back next week, of course, at our normal time. Took a day off for Mother's Day and for personal stuff, but got through it all. We'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy the episode. Have a fantastic time.
Take care, everyone.